Well, maybe I have one, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very good. So we even have a boombox now. Wonderful. Okay, so let's start with the Metta Sutta then.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or missing none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depth, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you. What a nice sutta that is. Okay. So the start of the talk is always the hardest thing. Because usually if you're not so used to do public speaking, you're usually a bit nervous. And that's what is happening now for me. But what also happened to me when I was going to see my brother about 3 years ago. He is a neurobiologist and he is researching emotions in the Max Planck Institute in Germany, and they're actually investigating meditation. And they invited me as an expert surgeon to talk about it. But I wasn't quite sure what they were investigating and how it all looks from a scientific point of view. So I did agree, of course, to give a bit of a talk, but I was very, very nervous. So you will remember the simile that Ajahn Brahm does with the glass of water,
yeah,
where he says he's trying to hold it as hard as he can to try and hold your mind to make it still. And I was actually holding the glass and my hand was shaking so hard. So it wasn't just me trying hard to hold it still. It was just me being very, very nervous. But then we had a meditation together. And that's kind of what we learn as monastics. And with time, that kind of develops and you become used to that. And I was able to really quieten down. And then after the meditation, when I was talking to them afterwards, then I was calm and I had perspective and the talk was actually quite nice. So I was thinking if we should turn it around here as well, because that usually gives the speaker a chance as well. So for example, with Ajahn Brahm, when he goes to town, usually on the Friday nights, he also has a talk, but before that he has a half an hour of a meditation. And as many of you might not be aware, but maybe might be aware of it now because of what happened recently with the whole committee and everything, Ajahn Brahm is really involved in so many things. And when he does go to town, a lot of people think that he's going to hide behind the scenes and he's having nice meditation and then he comes out and has another meditation and gives the talk. But actually there is lots of talking to the committee members, getting emails, or then also talking to the lay people for half an hour before he actually goes into the talk. So even for him it's very, very nice to have this kind of half an hour there to settle down, to give the mind a break, to have a bit of clarity, and then with that mind give a talk, and that talk is then very, very different. So in those terms, I hope that talk I'm going to give after the meditation is going to be okay as well. But usually what we do here, as far as I understand, is that we just give a bit of an introduction about meditation, what it is and how it works, before we actually do it. And I was just kind of reflecting this afternoon on and off what I should say, and I was thinking of the time when a Korean film crew came to our monastery. That's also quite a few years ago, and they came to film the monastery. They had all these modern gadgets like the drones and all that to film the things, and one of those drones, they were flying it backwards in the monastery. And when you fly backwards you don't see what's happening on the camera, so it crashed into a tree and it fell down and they couldn't find it, and we were looking for it for a very, very long time. And then about a year later we actually found the drone, and we found the footage of how the drone crashed into the tree and how it was falling down. So in the movie they made, they just had whatever they filmed before, the few days before, and on the memory card. So we also had that other memory card with the new footage, and I got permission from them to actually put it all together in a little movie. So I did that, but because most of it was in Korean, apart from the things that the monastics and the guests were saying on the video there, I just wiped it all clean. So I just had the pictures, and then I put the pictures together, and it's actually on our homepage at the moment now, to just give you an introduction about our monastery with very nice footage. And then my next kind of duty, or my next step, was to find a title for that movie. And I was reflecting on that as well. And one kind of quote from Ajahn Brahm got stuck in my head. And that was the quote, "Your real home is not the house you live in, but the stillness and the peace in your heart." So the first kind of title I came up with was "Your real home, stillness and peace." And then I thought about it for a little bit longer, and the title that came out afterwards was "Coming Home to Stillness and Peace." Mm-hmm. And that for me is kind of a summary of what meditation is really about. So when you think of it, what does coming home, or just even the word home, mean for us? It's actually just one little word, but it means so much when you really think about it. So home in a physical sense, of course, is a place where we live. It's a place where it's warm, it's a place where we have food, it's a place where we have our family, where we come and rest. But it's much, much more. It's not just this physical place. It's a place where you mentally also feel at ease, where you feel protected, where you feel at home, where you relax, where you don't feel there is expectations, where you don't feel there is pressures. And that's the place where you kind of retire to. It's the place where you go to recuperate and to get your energies back. And that's actually what meditation is as well. But what kind of happens very often is that even though we kind of have these places, we have our home, or we have this ability to go to our inner home, to our heart, to the stillness and the peace that is there, we don't really know how to do it, or we haven't had opportunities to learn it or to get exposed to it, or we're even a bit afraid of it. So it's like you're working all day long, and then because you don't really have time, you go and eat in a fast food restaurant, and instead of like coming home and taking time to cook and to have some nice food that actually really sustains you, you go in a fast food restaurant, and then once you come home, instead of actually kind of resting or being with your family and having meaningful relationships or conversations, you kind of go the easy way and you sit in front of a TV maybe, and you watch the news, and you watch all these kind of things that are happening in the world that kind of distract you, but they don't really give you a break. And for some people, they might even kind of go asleep in front of the TV and then not really get a rest. And in their sleep, they might even have lots of dreams instead of really having a routine of developing some healthy habits that can help you to maybe in the evening, you know, spend time with your loved ones, with your close ones, and then maybe remember all the good things that have happened that day, the things that you could do for other people, the people you have helped, instead of having to think about the news or about the kind of bad things that are happening in the world. And then maybe even also having a habit of just being grateful. There is some scientists that suggest it's a very good idea to even have a gratitude journal to write about these things. Because if you do that, then you will go into bed with all these positive things, and that will help you to either have positive dreams or to maybe even have a deep sleep without dreams at all. Or you might even have a practice of when you go to bed, and instead of thinking about what happened during the whole day, and instead of kind of anticipating and maybe having fears of what's going to happen the next day, to have a practice of going through the body. I don't know if some people have heard about the body sweeping meditation. And that's one of the practices that one of my teachers in India taught me a long, long time ago, where you just kind of go through your body step by step and be aware of the body parts and send them as much kindness as you can. And what happens very often then is that you actually fall asleep in the process, unless you're really, really enjoying it so much and you're getting bright awake. But that wouldn't matter either, because then you're just happily lying there and kind of gaining the energy. That's what sleep is there for. Right, so that was kind of more the outward things that are happening there. But the whole thing is happening internally as well. So this was just like a simile. Now, our mind and our heart has a lot of stillness and a lot of peace in it. But we sometimes have kind of forgotten, we sometimes have to forgotten how to access that or to get back to that. And I had a very, very nice example this week. I had some Baha'i kids from, from Byford, who came to visit the monastery. And they were actually quite young. Some of the kids were 5, and other kids, and so it was going upwards from 5 up to maybe about 10. And for the people who have been to Bodhinyana Monastery, you might know Ajahn Brahm's cave. And that cave is really, really quiet. And it also has a lot of energy that kind of builds up in that place because he is practicing there. So I wanted to show them that as kind of like a tourist attraction a little bit, but also for them to kind of feel what it is like to be peaceful, to have stillness around. And I had 2 groups. The first group was more or less the smaller kids. It just happened that way. They split it up by themselves. And the other group was the more kind of grown-up kids. And the grown-up kids, they came in first. And I asked them, okay, are you brave enough? And is it okay for you guys if I switch off the light when we have all the doors shut? There is 2 doors and they're kind of soundproofed. To really kind of hear the stillness and to connect with it and just kind of see how that feels like. And we did that. But the problem was that it couldn't really be silent. They were afraid of the silence. And one of them was kind of mumbling and saying, awkward silence. And the kids next to him were giggling. And that kind of showed me that we are kind of getting used to these things, that stillness and peace is not really valued in our world anymore, or we don't know it, or it kind of feels awkward. It was funny though, once I kind of told them, oh, it was a bit sad, you know, that didn't happen, didn't work and all that, they said, oh, can we do another time? I said, okay, we have to have the other group, you had your chance this time, maybe next time. But then when we went in with the other group, with the younger kids, and they were dead silent. So they haven't been taught that you have to be afraid when it's silent. They haven't been taught that it is weird, or that you have to fill the silence. They were actually still kind of connected to that. And that kind of ties in with all these kind of expectations that we learn along the way, and that we kind of have to unlearn again. Right, so that is another thing with the expectations that I wanted to share with you. When I started to go to the monasteries in England, that was in Amarwati, it's quite a long time ago, I was a guest there, and I would stay with those monks, and they would have talks sometimes on the moon days, and they would kind of come up and just talk about what came to their mind. It wasn't like a talk that was organized and they had everything written down, and it wasn't like a school. And I kind of had this expectation that that's how it's like. You go somewhere and they teach you something and it's very clear and it starts here, and at the end of the talk you know exactly what to do and you have kind of a recipe book or whatever. And they were a little bit like me, you know, going all over the place and just seeing what comes up in their mind and sharing it. Another thing which was there is there was a lot of pauses in their talks as well. And I was just like those kids. I wasn't really used to that. And I kind of was a bit bored, or I kind of felt there, sitting there and thinking about, oh, this is a monk, you know, and this monk has been a monk for a long time, or a nun, and they should know what they have to say, and I want to get my money's worth. I mean, I didn't pay for it, but just I had that kind of mindset. And I was getting a bit irritated and upset. And it was interesting to go back to that place maybe about 5 years later, after I've spent a lot of time in different monasteries. And I have realized that I have changed my conditioning. I have changed my expectations. Because that time, when I was sitting there, and they were still giving the same kind of talks, they were just talking about this and that, they were talking about their life, they're giving different ideas, but there were a lot of pauses. But this time, I actually enjoyed the pauses. I enjoyed the stillness in between. I enjoyed just sitting there, being with the group, being in those surroundings, knowing that there was a person who is willing to sit in front of a whole group and just share with them, even though they might not want to, it's just like their turn or whatever. So it was so interesting to see how the whole mindset has shifted there. And that's kind of what is happening in meditation as well. So when you maybe read about meditation, or just kind of hear people talking about it, and you think, oh, I want to try this thing, and you just kind of sit down and you don't really know what you're doing yet, it can be really, really difficult to kind of get the hang of it. And that's why we have guided meditations, and that's what we will do together afterwards, where someone can kind of like take your hand and give you a few inputs every now and then, and try to create a feeling where you feel at home, where you feel there is no expectations, where you feel there is no pressures, where you feel where that meditation thing is really pointing at. And that's what we usually do. We try to kind of start with the body and start to relax the body in whatever way that helps you guys. I will give you some suggestions from my side, but if there is something that you like to do or that you help that helps you, please do that. Whatever helps you to relax and to let go, that is what will lead you into meditation, and that will make the process smooth. And then when we have dealt with the body, we go more into the mental world, and we start to deal with our thoughts. And the same thing there is, we learn to relate to those thoughts in a way that we can let them go, that we can let them slide away, that we can let them go into the background. And one of the things that very often happens with people is that we are not mindful enough, that we are not accustomed enough to this process to see what is happening and to really appreciate that, because that is what drives your meditation. So with the body, as I said before, when we're dealing with that, when the letting go happens, when the relaxation happens, that's when we have to be really there to see it, to appreciate it, and to try to savor it like our favorite food. And that is what will kind of help us to make the meditation longer and longer, and to kind of lean in the right direction. One thing that one teacher was saying very nicely is, meditation is actually quite easy, and it's something that everyone can do. The hard part is to maintain it. So when I tell someone to just sit down and try to relax, and it is something pleasant, and it's something that everyone can do, but the hard part is to actually be there and to prolong that process, or to when we kind of lose that and start to go in our thoughts, or start to get engrossed with pains or whatever else might be happening in our body, to go back and to start again and to prolong these moments. And then when meditation starts to develop and to flourish, then the mind kind of naturally goes in that direction. And then when we start to sit down, we kind of have a process that has been learned. We have been deconditioned, so to speak, from all the things that we've learned in our world, where people say there is value, but there might not be as much value really there. And to get closer and closer to what that stillness and that peace really means. Anyway, that's just a few words about meditation, but I think it's much, much better if we actually try it together and feel for ourselves what that might be like. Okay. So in order to start with the meditation, please just get your body in a comfortable position where it's still fairly kind of upright, because we're not trying to sleep, but still as comfortable as it can get. And with your hands, it doesn't really matter where they are, as long as they are somewhere where you can kind of like park them and forget about them. And when we sit there like this in silence, it might be a bit awkward. So that's why we do guide our mind to an object to keep it just a little bit busy and a little bit comfortable. And that object is usually the body, because it's just the most obvious thing at this stage. just let your mind gently rest on your body. And when you do that, you might actually become aware of some of the spots in your body that are not that comfortable or a little bit tight. And that's when you ask yourself, is there anything I can do to make this body more comfortable at this stage? Can I wiggle it or scratch it? Or twist it? So that the discomfort and the tension can ease away. And if we are here and present, then we will notice that when we are aware and kind to our body, when we let go and relax, that it feels really good. That is the benefit of meditation. The ease and the happiness that arises. This is actually quite good. Is there any other spot in the body that is not relaxed yet? Is there anything else I can do with awareness and kindness to make this body feel relaxed and at ease, and to maintain that state? Let's have a look around the shoulders. That's where there is often tension. Can I relax that area? Can I let it go? And if you can, then feel what the result is. Feel in which direction the mind is leaning. And what about your face? There are so many muscles in the face. And very often, we tense those muscles, even though now it's time to let go and to relax. Is there any tension around your eyes? Can you smooth the muscles and let go? And what about the mouth and the jaw? How does it feel there? Can you do anything to make it feel more relaxed and at ease? And what happens if you put a slight little smile on your face? Just gently lift the corners of your mouth. How does that feel? If you drift off, don't worry. Just ask yourself, how's my body feeling now? Is there any area that I can relax with kindness and attention? you take good care of your body, then it will automatically just fade into the background. Because all its needs are met, no questions to ask, no attention it needs. If it does slip away, just let it slip away. And this is the point where we are starting to enter the mental world. Where we get in touch with our heart. Where we start to finally come home. Imagine you're coming home to a place where you feel relaxed and at ease, whatever that might be for you. Your family, somewhere in nature, in a cave far away from everyone. Imagine you are entering that sacred space which is your home, your real home. It might feel a bit strange if you don't come here often. But you can hear a voice welcoming you, saying, "Welcome home," and your name. You don't know where it comes from, but it's a very, very kind and friendly voice. Welcoming you home. I don't know how this is happening, but somehow, strangely, the past and the future is slipping away from you. All your worries and concerns and fears don't have any meaning here. Because here is everything you need. You are home. Home at last. there is another strange thing happening in this place called home, in your heart. It feels so warm and so light here, so bright. Then you become aware that there actually is a light right in front of you. A warm, bright light. That lets you melt in its presence. You feel totally at ease and relaxed, fully accepted and loved. This light is growing and growing. Until there is nothing else than just this warm, bright light. And you can feel how it's filling you. And how you are actually starting to glow from the inside.
and let the light grow until your whole body, your whole being is glowing as well. You're now hopefully filled with this bright, warm, fuzzy, nice feeling. Welcome it and stay with it as long as you can. you need something to anchor your attention. Just see if you can feel what your breath is doing. And gently invite it into your consciousness. And stay with that. If the joy and happiness is not strong enough to stay with that. If your mind wanders to the body or to thoughts, no problem. Just return back home. To stillness, to peace, or to the breath. You are slowly approaching the end of this meditation. I will soon have to leave home and come back into this world. But I ask you to please notice what has shifted, what has changed during this meditation. How does your body, how does your mind feel compared to before? And then I also wish that you remember that this place is always there to come back. Right there in your heart. Ready to be accessed. Okay, I will be ringing the gong 3 times for you to slowly come out of your meditation. Right. Hope that was nice. I guess something different. Because the guided meditations are always a bit different and you have many different monastics coming, guiding you in the meditations. That must be very nice. So you get a bit of a buffet of different ways of approaching this. I still kind of have one promise from last time. When I was here, I was speaking about caring about Karuna, and we were able to kind of talk about it a little bit, what it means, but we didn't really have time to go into what the obstacles might be on the path to caring, to being there for another person, to being there for yourself. So I was hoping to do that in the second part. I have brought a little sheet with me because I did that with the teens group in Melbourne. Not this year, but last year when I was over there. Very good. And it kind of ties in with the theme of being home and of staying home, of being able to be connected with your heart, being able to be connected with stillness and peace. And that's what we kind of really need if we are struggling or if another person is struggling, and we wish to be there with them. We wish to be empathetic. We wish to feel with them and not feel for them. That's what caring is. And the Buddha talks about enemies in terms of the 4 Brahmaviharas, and one of them is Karuna, compassion. And he also talks about a far enemy and a near enemy.
And the far enemy is always something which is quite clear in our mind. So we recognize it very easily. And the far enemy of caring is actually when we are cruel or when we don't really care at all about someone. That's quite easy to understand. But the near enemy is always the difficult one. The near enemy is something which can kind of sneak in there and look a little bit like caring, but it's not actually quite that thing. And that is when we have pity with a person. But there is a whole kind of gradient that develops from the far enemy to the near enemy. And what I kind of did with them, I put it in a little kind of, whatever you might call that, in a little drawing or whatever. And it was the path to Karuna that starts from quite far away from what caring means and then goes closer and closer towards it. And on that path, we do have all the obstacles of actually caring for ourselves or of caring for other people. And I just wanted to go through those, because usually what happens is when we are aware of what is in the way, when we are aware what a problem could be, then it's much, much easier to avoid it. I guess most of you have heard the story of Ajahn Brahm when he was over in Thailand and when there were just so many snakes around in the forest, and he knew there were snakes around. So he had to be very, very careful and very, very mindful to avoid those snakes, to get back to his hut, to safety. And that's like a little bit similar here with the different snakes that are on the way to caring. So the first one I've already quickly mentioned, which is the ignorance, the not even seeing something, the basically saying, I always have kind of like a catchphrase there, of saying I don't care when someone is suffering or something difficult is arising in our own life. Then another obstacle which very often arises as well is that we start to blame, that we start to look for someone to blame, someone to kind of get angry with, and we think that is going to solve the problem, but that is not really what caring and being there with another person is about. So blame, the catchphrase there would be, it's all your fault. Either we think it's our own fault if we are suffering, or it's the fault of another person. But of course, we all know that is not really caring, but we still very, very often fall into those traps. And another one is fear. And I think that's quite a big one. And because of fear, we actually say, I don't want to know. Because caring means walking in the shoes of the other person, or really trying to connect with what is happening there, connect with what is happening in our own mind or what is happening in someone else's mind when they're suffering. And that's not an easy thing to do. So it's very, very natural that we sometimes do have fear. Another thing that arises very often as well is that we start to belittle. And the catchphrase there is kind of like, oh, it's not that bad. It's just kind of a small thing. Doesn't really matter. And that's not really what is caring about. If someone is really suffering, or if we ourselves are suffering, this is not really going to help the situation there. And other way of reacting is overreacting or dramatizing whatever is happening there, where we kind of go into this end of the world scenario, where we kind of spring into action and we think that is going to solve the problem. So it's kind of, the catchphrase there is, this is the end of the world. This is just so huge. And we think, though, that if we overreact and dramatize, that we can solve the problem that way. The other thing that can happen there is that we start to get insensitive towards ourselves or towards the other person. The catchphrase there is that we say, come on, get your act together, either to ourselves or to another person. But again, not really a helpful response. The other one, which ties into with fear, is helplessness. So we think, what can I do? And again, that's not what caring is about. Caring doesn't mean I have the solutions or I'm solving the problem. Caring simply means being a witness, being there for myself or for another person. And just this reassurance of being there and telling another person, you are not alone in this, is very often actually the solution, without having to do too much, or without kind of throwing your hands in the air and saying, what can I do? And the next one is being the hero, or micromanaging, as I was saying before, where we kind of spring into this role of, I'm in charge here, I know exactly what to do, you have to do this, 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 and that will solve the problem, either to ourselves or to another person. But yeah, it's not very caring response either. Slowly we're moving closer towards affection and connection here. The next one is taking it on, and that is kind of going into this category of sympathy, where the catchphrase is, I feel bad for you. And that's why I don't really like to use the word compassion, because the word compassion comes from compatio, which actually means suffering with. And then we don't really help the situation. If someone is suffering and we come in and we suffer as well, then it's two people suffering. In German, that's one of my native tongues, we actually have two words which make a difference there. One is Mitleid, and Leid is suffering, and means suffering with, and we have Mitgefühl, and Mitgefühl means feeling with. So that would be the sympathy, or that's why I like to use the word caring instead of compassion. Next one is feeling responsible for it. It's all my fault, or it's all the other person's fault, that this has happened that way. It goes into a similar thing like the taking on thing there. Also, what happens sometimes is that we, with this springing into action, that we overstep the boundaries, that we kind of get into someone else's business way too much. Again, we're saying, like, I know exactly how you feel and what you need. Very often we don't. And very often we can offer and try to understand. We can offer and try to step into their kind of shoes. But we will never 100% be able to do that, because their situation is never exactly the same like our own situation. So we can kind of tune in, we can kind of try to get a similar feeling, but we have to be very careful there and realize that when we say, I know exactly what you feel, or I do understand, we are overstepping a certain boundary there between the person and what they're experiencing, and between what we are experiencing. And then the last one there, which is actually very, very close, but still, it gives you this kind of relationship of, I'm higher and you are lower, with the pity that comes in there. Like kind of thinking about someone, oh, you poor thing. Why did this kind of happen to you? Instead of realizing that these things do happen in life, and that it's not, you know, you're a poor thing, it's just you happen to be in this situation. And I'm trying to be with you, make sure you're not alone, be present with you, and just let you speak and let you tell me what's going on with you. And sometimes, as I was saying with this, trying to solve the problem, often it is even more helpful just to tell the other person and say thank you that they're sharing their situation with you. And just realizing that very, very often some of the situations are so bad that we can't make them good again, and that it's not really our kind of responsibility to do that. Caring just means saying, I see you, and I'm trying to understand and feel with you and see what's going on for you in life. Okay, that's my promise from last time. Also for the people, if the recording is going to go online, then the talks will be closer together. My last talk I gave is actually quite a long time ago, because I was in Melbourne for 3 months in between, and as you all know, we have the rains retreat, the monastery as well, so that's another 3 months, so very quickly you get 6 months, 8 months, or a year, and we have quite a lot of middle monks and senior monks these days, so you get a lot of us here, and we don't get a turn that often. Okay, I would like to open up for questions, if you have any questions about what I said before, or any experiences or question about the meditation or about caring. Yes, please.
The word that sprung to my mind in the last 2 or 3 months, and I don't know why, this empathetic.
Yes.
I don't know why I've been taking that word, and I really don't understand it, but it's come into my mind, and
yes.
My conception of empathetic is a sort of a collection of what you've been talking about.
Exactly, yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Empathy is kind of the opposite of sympathy. Sympathy is where you go into this mode of, oh, you poor thing, and I pity you, and you're kind of higher, and the other person is lower, and is somewhere in a hole, and instead of kind of going down there and being with the person, you're talking kind of up from the top there and saying, oh, it's dark down there, isn't it? Or kind of trying to offer help and say things in terms of saying, oh, at least it's not this or it's not that. But that is not empathy, that is not caring. Caring is actually being there with the person, listening to the person, telling the person, I'm here, you're not alone. I value who you are, not what you're going through. And that often includes a lot of silence, like with meditation. So that's why those concepts are so kind of close to each other. When I'm trying to push in meditation, or when I try to kind of think of myself, oh, you poor thing, you're thinking about the past or thinking about the future, I'm kind of making the situation worse. But if I'm just aware, if I'm just a witness, if I'm just there, and if I try to radiate as much kindness as I can, and warmth and acceptance, then this feeling of being at home can arise. And maybe in simple terms, empathy means creating that environment for yourself and for another person, where there is no pressure, where there is no judgment, where there is no kind of, as I said before, I'm in charge, I know what to do. Very often,
it's a good place to be.
Very often we don't, eh?
It's a good place to be.
Empathy?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes. Because empathy fuels connection. Pity is kind of like disconnection. Or all the other things we were talking about, especially the far enemy, is disengagement. And engagement doesn't mean I'm the hero and I'm solving all your problems or I know exactly what to do. It just means I'm connecting. I'm here. I'm not running away. I'm not afraid. I'm brave. I'm willing to be vulnerable and be in a place with another person or with myself that is uncomfortable, like the silence in Ajahn Brahm's cave. And if we can do that, then we can break through to the home which is behind all these things. The home is always there, but it's kind of covered up with all these things, these problems, and these the past and the future, and our body and our problems and all that. But if we learn to have an empathetic approach, then this is kind of like the key to open the door which goes to your real home, which goes to stillness, which goes to peace. So it is important to know these obstacles and to know the antidotes. And maybe read out again what empathy or what caring means. It means reaching out, saying, how can I help? It is striving to understand. Please tell me more. It is an interest. How does that feel for you? How is it for you? So, for example, if people had a death in their family or something, very often our reaction is, oh, I'm sorry. Instead of just asking, how is this for you? It might have been a relief. Or it might be hard, yes. But if they can actually tell us what it feels for them, it's much better than just kind of offering, oh, here is my apology, or here's my kind of sorry, whatever. It doesn't do that much. It's a nice gesture, but it doesn't go as deep as the other one. And then, as I said, the appreciation, to kind of value the person, even though they're going through a hard time. They're still my friend, and I value them for who they are and not for what they're going through, to just kind of make the difference there. And then the other one, listening on connection, yes. And it does need a lot of silence and a lot of attention, and we often get very uncomfortable. So just being with a person when they're in a hard time is something which helps a lot. Or encouraging them to kind of tell them, oh, you know, things do pass, it will take a bit of time, but you can do it. You will pull through, or we will pull through. I'm here for you. You are not alone. Does that kind of make sense, what empathy means? Sure. Any other questions about this topic or about meditation? Not really. maybe one little... Oh, sorry, yes, please.
No, that's okay. You're back on track. Keep going.
Well, I just remembered one story. When my friend died, she was still very, very young. She was 25 when she died. She had a brain hemorrhage, and we went to teacher training college together. And when I heard about it, I, of course... contacted her parents and wanted to go and see them. And it's a very difficult situation. I mean, they had two children, but losing a child is one of those hardest things people say. I don't have my own experience, but I can kind of imagine what that must mean. And back then I was already staying at another other monastery and keeping the eight precepts, almost like an anagarika, and wearing white. And it was very strange, because of course when people die, everyone is wearing black. So the first thing I had to do is go to the family and explain to them. I'm not trying to make a statement here, okay? This is just how I walk around these days, so that's why I'm wearing white. And then I of course came to the family and just tried to be with them and see and feel what it actually means for them. And I didn't have this emotional response of crying or of being sad, because I really knew she was a very, very lovely person. And in terms of Buddhism, we know that good actions have good results, and I was kind of thinking of that and keeping that in my mind. But they had she was also a primary school teacher like I used to be, and it happened during the school year. So what the other teachers did, they got all the kids together and asked them to write letters for her family. And those letters, they were just so beautiful. The kids had such a natural and nice way to respond to this. So a lot of people were talking about how what a nice person she was, and how they wish her a good next life, and how she will have a good existence in the future. And I was just flicking through that booklet, and the tears were streaming down my cheeks, and I kind of felt relieved to be crying, because then they could kind of relate. But the funny, strange thing was that these were tears of joy and not tears of sadness. And I think that is what compassion is really about. And it is really difficult, yes, when we get into a situation where a person is really suffering, we have to kind of overcome that hurdle to be there with them and to face this difficult thing. But real compassion is not getting caught in those obstacles. Real compassion is actually veering to this other thing that I just described in this story, in actually wishing from the bottom of your heart well towards that person. And that's what is the real home, the stillness and the peace. That's what the heart is. All the other emotions are kind of at the edge outside of the heart, but they're not really what the heart radiates by itself. And when you learn to do compassion meditations, for example, then you learn to focus on this aspect, that you wish the other person well, that you wish that they're not suffering, and that you kind of get off on that beautiful energy. And I feel that that is really something which can help another person, because you're like, I said last time when I was here, you're opening a door for them to access something which they really need in that situation, because they are suffering so much. So instead of suffering with them, you feel with them to get an understanding what's going on. But real compassion means to wish them well from the bottom of your heart, and to share that energy, to let that fill up your whole being, and then hopefully give them access to the same thing. And then their grief or their sadness or their suffering kind of has a way to get released. It can be let go of. And I think that's what real compassion and real empathy is. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, please.
For the beginners and the newbies, the monkey mind.
Yes. The monkey mind, what that is. Okay, yes. The mind in the scriptures is very often compared to a monkey. And that means that the mind is like swimming, not swimming, but swinging from branch to branch, from one thought to the next thought. And in meditation, as I was saying in the beginning, we're trying to steady the mind. We're trying to encourage the mind to stay with one object. And in order to do that, in order to not have the monkey mind, which is kind of going all over the place and thinking, oh, this is interesting, and get a bit of that fruit and go on this tree and have a look what kind of what it looks like from there, what the perspective is there, is to give the mind something which is pleasurable. And that's what we've tried to do in the meditation, to create something which the mind can appreciate, and that appreciation always happens through letting go. And we encourage the mind to stay and to learn and to grow that happiness, and that will sustain it. And then it doesn't jump around like a monkey from one thing to another thing, because once you are home, there's nowhere else to go. Once you are satisfied, once you are contented, what more do you want? There is just the monkey is kind of like dumbfounded, or it's basically just so happy that it just sits down and eats that banana for half an hour and savors it, or whatever it is, you know. Yeah. So in meditation, we learn that attention can be focused, attention can be guided, attention can be encouraged to lean in a certain direction, and to stay there, and to settle there, and to become content, and to become happy. Make sense? Okay. I think time has advanced. Thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity to come and share with you tonight. I hope there is something little you can take away. That's my wish. even if it's just one sentence or one concept that you can kind of keep in your mind, and that will help you to lessen your suffering and to increase your happiness, I think my task has been accomplished.
Thank you
very much. Very good.
Thank you very much, Venerable. You're welcome back anytime.
Yes.
Thank you.